Hello everybody and welcome back to the channel and another video. It is the first of the season of the Arsenal show. Let's play the intro and get right into it. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the channel and another video. So joining us this evening, we have got Ray. Ray, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all good, James. I'm all good. Thank you again for inviting me on. When I got the call up, you've got to do it, haven't you? I know Arsenal have a different knock, and so do yourself, my friend. So it had to be done. And when you said I'm coming on with Melvin as well, I'm absolutely buzzing for that. Melvin, I haven't seen you in a little while, so good to catch up, and should be a good one.
Yeah, and he's took the thunder right away, but it doesn't matter anyway. Melvin, we can all see you now. We know you're here as well. It's not an imposter. Melvin, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, nice to be on with you, Ray. Takes us back to a couple of years ago, standing in that pub, having that conversation. And
yeah,
it's been uphill since then. No, damn it. Was it uphill or downhill?
Well, do you know what? I thought it would be nice to do like a full circle moment. And I know last season, my first show, I had you and Neil on, Melvin. And I thought, yeah. You know what, Neil's done, I reckon, about three podcasts about this already. So I was like, I don't think he's going to want to do a fourth. He probably would have, because Neil is arguably one of the nicest people, not just on Twitter, but in real life. And he probably would have done it. But I thought, I'll give him a break. I'll let him do, you know, I'll let him wait till he has to do his other three or four podcasts for the Aston Villa game. I mean, I don't know if you saw, he's talking about transfers and everything now. He's a changed man now, Neil. He does lineups, he does transfers.
He'll be on Sky Sports next, won't he, Neil?
Exactly. So, something else has got into him. It's amazing, the transformation. It really is. But yeah, going into the game, obviously Saturday afternoon, we've all had our musings and our thoughts and everything. Ray, were you there?
I wasn't, no, unfortunately. I was watching from home.
Okay. Yeah, standard. Yeah, same here. But Melvin, obviously you were there. And just before the game, I'll quickly pull this up here. Where is it? I've got it here somewhere. Come on, James. Prep. There we go. Obviously, we had the tribute beforehand to, obviously, Super Kev, Kevin Campbell. And Melvin, I think, unlike me and Ray, obviously, we're too young to obviously remember him in his heyday for Arsenal. We more so remember him as maybe a Forest and obviously Everton player, helping them stay up. And then obviously West Brom and then Cardiff before he retired. As per usual, great tribute from Arsenal. Obviously, there was videos of the Guns and Yellow Ribbons lads, obviously singing the chant after it all come up. But have you got anything you want to add here for Kevin? Obviously, you know him as well on a personal level, like we did. But yeah, have you got any other thoughts about him, mainly more as a player than everything else as well?
Obviously, as a player, the first thing that comes to mind is when he, and I'm recalling this, so my mind might be not in sync, but I remember he came on a sub. And we knew this guy, Kevin Campbell, was a youngster. He came on and everyone looked at each other. How old is he? He did not look his age. He was built like a boxer. And he was a very unlucky player at Arsenal on the basis who he had to, Ian Wright was around, Alan Smith was around. And I think he had to have one of his legs taken off not to play. You know, and a professional football was like that years ago with the squads. But when he did play, he was terrific. He sometimes played with both of them, but whoever he played with, he was so good. He wasn't just a finisher. He was an out-and-out footballer. He could play, he could head a ball. Though he wasn't the tallest of people, he could get up and head a ball. He was just an all-round great, he was a very, very stroke great footballer. And he scored some very important goals for us. So, you know, it's a shame, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, to some degree, there's parallels drawn between him and Rocky. You know, very, very, you know, it's too sad. It's sad. Two parallels that are both ended in sadness. But, you know, when I was, I've seen him on pods and I've been on a couple of pods with him and he's been absolutely fantastic. You know, it's what you see is what you get with him because he was like that all the time. He never overspoke when he was on the pod. He let everyone have their say. He never give it the big one because that just wasn't him. That wasn't him, no. And I think Arsenal did well by they did it on Saturday as well.
Yeah. And Ray, obviously, I don't know if you ever did any podcasts with him, but you've obviously consumed podcasts that he's been on, like the most of us. And one thing I will say, Melvin, which is spot on about, is I think he's one of the only few that I've seen of professional footballers that whenever he did a podcast with somebody, even if he felt it in himself, he never if you gave an opinion, even if he probably thought that is the most stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life, he never outed people on it. He just sat there and respect. And I think out of every other pro that I've seen do these podcasts, because there's so many, I think he was the most gracious. And I think he was obviously the most kind, regardless of what your opinion was. And he would give you a chance. You know, he had tit for tat with me sometimes on Highbury Squad, which I just can't speak enough. It's very rare nowadays when someone passes away. Sadly, you get people that will leave a negative comment, but I have not seen one thing negative about him whatsoever. Even from, you know, you sometimes get these horrible people that support clubs that are rivals that will chime in with stuff. You know, I've not seen anything from any Liverpool fan or, you know, Tottenham fans. All of it has just been respectful, and that speaks volumes for me about what kind of man he was. But Ray, obviously, have you got any thoughts about Kevin before we get into the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I've never done a podcast with him, but I did actually meet him on two occasions. So I am very fortunate in that respect. I met him when he'd done a live podcast with the Highbury Squad at the Hippodrome Casino, Leicester Square. And I met him last October. He'd done a meet and greet in my hometown. And just what you were saying there, like, I can only sort of echo it, really. He was an unbelievable presence online anyway, and how he come across. And sometimes you think when the camera stops rolling and whatever else, no one's paying attention, you know, how is someone going to be? And honestly, he was exactly as he was on camera off it. He was an unbelievable kind bloke. As you mentioned there, he gave everyone the time of day. He listened to their opinions. I remember this event went on, I think it was like 7 till like 9:30 or something. But we stayed until like 11:30, maybe even midnight, behind having a few drinks with him. And there was a Man United fan, and this was last season now. So he was arguing that Man United had a better season because they'd won the Carabao Cup, I believe, and finished third or fourth. And Kevin, bless him, he let him go on. And then he just absolutely just tore him down and told him why he was wrong. And just everything he'd done, mate, was with class. And he's going to be sorely, sorely missed.
Yeah, he is. He is. So touching on the game, I'll go to you again, Ray, first. Lineup wise, I think pretty much everybody called it what it would be. I think the only two big issues of debate was obviously that left-hand side. And obviously Thomas Partey's position as six. Some were thinking, would it be Jorginho in there? And then would it be Rice and Odegaard? Would it be Timber? Would it be Calafiori at left back? And then the other one was, would it be Martinelli and would it be Trossard? Did anything shock you? I personally, when I did my lineup tweet like I do in the morning, I thought he was going to go with Trossard. But what about yourself? Was the lineup what you expected?
Yeah, pretty much. I'd have to agree with that. I think Trossard's, I thought would have started and maybe would have brought Martinelli on with his pace towards the end. But classic Mikel, he didn't. He threw everyone there. But in terms of Zinchenko, I think he was always going to play. I think he had a really good pre-season, didn't he? Particularly in Emirates Cup games. And so I think he was always locked in, even though we've had, you know, spent on Calafiori and we've got, you know, Jurrien Timber back and obviously Tomiyasu is in the wings as well, hospital wings, but he's in the wings. I think in terms of Thomas Partey, I think if a Thomas Partey is fit enough to start, I think he starts at this moment in time. Jorginho is a quality player for us. And in the right game, I think he really benefits our system. But I think we've got to give Partey a chance to get minutes in his legs and see what he's all about. And see if he can get back to his old levels, really. I think that's kind of it, really.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Partey, especially after that Lyon game, deserved to be in there. I thought he actually looked like Thomas Partey of old in that pre-season game. But Melvin, what about yourself? Obviously, you're in there. And I know when that lineup gets announced or they see it on the screen, there's obviously the few jitters and rumblings. But were you one of the ones that were jittering and rumbling, or were you like, that's pretty much what I expected?
No, it was as good as to be expected. Yeah, there were a couple of situations like the left-back position, left-wing position and midfield position. But with Partey, he was fit enough to start, but he seems to be not fit enough to finish. That second half performance, he looked like he was ready for a nice lay down. And that's not having a go at him. He's just not ready yet. He might be Ray in a couple of weeks, hopefully. Because in the Lyon game, let's not forget, he's a friendly. And it's a different type. It's not being like a Premiership. When players come to the Premiership, they know the difference. So if they play Arsenal in a friendly, it's not going to be the same intensity as playing first game of the season. I know that a lot of our, not just having a go at him, there was a lot of players that looked rusty, most certainly second half. I mean, I think Zinchenko lost a bit. He was like floundering a bit. I didn't think that, I thought Martinelli, he's got it all. And I think it's just to do with confidence, James. I really do. For some reason, that light switch hasn't gone on for him yet. Once it does, then he'd be flying. And who else was it? It was the midfield, Zinchenko. Yeah, that was it. And Trossard, when he came on, did he touch the ball? I don't recall it. It might be that he was the other side of the field to me, but my eyesight's not that bad. I don't actually remember him doing anything. So they're still a little bit rusty around the edges. So that's why we just had to win the game, didn't we? But I was disappointed. Was disappointed because we're sitting there and I'm sitting with two other guys, as you know, James, and we're all like mumbling under our breath the same thing. Make a substitution. Jorginho should have been brought on for Partey. The left back, Zinchenko, was just drifting and he just didn't have it in him. You know, if they had a right winger that was any good, he would have murdered him second half. And also with Martinelli, you had to make a change. We were saying that there was no energy in the team second half, and we made Wolves look a half decent team for 30 minutes of the second half, and they're not a half decent team. We should have been out of sight, could have been out of sight first half. And I said to my son, I said, is he going to wait till they equalise before he brings someone on? It felt like that, but thank God it didn't, and Saka did the business. But I mean, he was before he actually scored, he was struggling himself. I think he'd got another kick, one out of 100 kicks that he got on Saturday. So yeah, the lineup was okay. You know, it's okay. But I hope the lineup is different when we play Villa, which we'll talk about on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, especially with the lineup. So we will touch on that. I promise we will get back into that. But one of the other reasons why, Melvin, I wanted to have you on is obviously on Twitter, I saw you made a comment with Trev from Guns and Yellow Ribbons about how you felt about the game. So, and again, it's all about the opinions and how you saw it. But going from what you said, because a lot of people were like, no, I'm happy with that. That was a comfortable 2-0. That word comfortable, to me, I didn't feel necessarily comfortable in that second half. I didn't think we were going to lose, but the word comfortable, I mean, there's a lot of shouts for man in a match that we'll get into later. And I've given it to certain somebody, but there is a shout for somebody else to get it. But yeah, I'll go to obviously you, Ray, first, and then come back to you, Melvin. So what about you, Ray? Did you feel it was comfortable, or were you a bit like me and Melvin in that there was a period there where slight worry gets in?
Yeah, I think it always does, especially supporting the Arsenal. I think certainly over the last 10, 15 years, you're ingrained, aren't you? And it all just blown up in your face. But I think how we've improved defensively, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I can see them maybe getting an equaliser, but I could never see us actually losing it. And I feel like if we did, it would be something of our own doing. I couldn't see Wolves doing anything brilliant to open us up. So, yeah, there's always a nerve, especially when it's only 1-0, right? So, you know, it only takes one goal and they're right back in it. But overall, I think we were okay. I don't like the word comfortable like you, James. I think it's because it's football, right? I mean, comfortable for me, we'd need to be 6-0 up with 5 minutes to go. But
Yeah,
I bringing Ganasaurus off the bench. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I agree. So, touching just quickly on that first half, obviously, they had a few good chances. I mean, they got this guy up front, I never heard of him before, Brun Larsen. I thought that the big tall guy they had was Kalajdzic, who, obviously, Ray, you're a FIFA player like myself, I believe. That guy, if you can get him on your career mode, he's an absolute animal. But this other guy, he looked absolutely massive at times. I mean, Saliba and Gabriel are big boys, but he looked like a giant compared to Saliba and Gabriel. But he obviously had that chance. David Raya made a great save. And I'll go to you, Ray. Obviously, David Raya now is a permanent signing. Were you happy that that got done? Because I know there's still a lot of people within the fan base that they're obviously coming round to it. But I think there's obviously still a lot of love for Ramsdale there and a lot of feeling for Ramsdale. But clearly, this guy's got to be our number one now, Ray, surely.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I am really sad to see Aaron Ramsdale go. I know he's a fan's favourite and I personally really warm to him. I know he had his flaws and he wasn't perfect, but overall I think he was a really good goalkeeper and, you know, we're going to miss him. But he's never a number two. And I feel like now that it hasn't been confirmed yet, has it, guys? But it looks like he's on the way out, Aaron Ramsdale. I feel like now that we've got the situation sorted, that David Raya will be the number one. And we're not going to have this, is he starting, is he not, Raya Ramsdale thing. I think that's going to really benefit us. I do like David Raya. I think he's still got a few levels to go up to really win everyone over properly. And I feel like last season, off the top of my head, I can only think of Porto in the Champions League where I thought, wow, that was a David Raya masterclass. The rest of it was just sort of okay. And obviously he had his moments, good and bad. But I feel like this was a really good game for David Raya. As you mentioned, that save in particular against Brun Larsen was his name. Outstanding. Really, really important for us. And that's exactly, going back to your last point, that's why you couldn't really get comfortable with the game, because there was always that potential. But David Raya saved us. Crucial to do that at that time of the game. And now that he looks like he's our number one, I think he's settled, and I think that can only benefit us, really.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously Melvin as well, David Raya, that I thought at times, especially William Saliba, he looked very, very shaky on the ball. I know there was that moment in the second half where he gave the ball away. That was the big one. But in terms of helping the team keep that clean sheet at the weekend, I think that back four really need to go to David Raya and say thank you very much, because I think it was more so he kept that a clean sheet than what the defence really... I know a lot of fans have said that, David Raya looks good because of that back four that's in front of him. Well, I think at the weekend, he showed that it's not just the back four. There's a lot about me and my game that's still good. So what do you make of that, Melvin? Did you think that he was the sole contributor?
I mean, both things can be true at once. I think that the defence has definitely helped David Raya go up a grade. I think he's a better goalkeeper than when we first signed him. And that's to do with the four guys in front of him. Get back to Saliba for a minute, who I think is outstanding, star, plus. That was his worst game I've seen in an Arsenal jersey, by far, not even close. He just wasn't at it. It could be rusty or whatever, I don't know. But he was just giving the ball away. I mean, that big one he gave away, it was highlighted. But in the first half, he gave two or three away that didn't come to anything, but it could have done. But it was higher up the field, so it wasn't so obvious that it's going to be a danger. As far as the two goalkeepers concerned, David Raya was our number one goalkeeper the minute that you saw the video of Arteta with his family. I think Raya would have to have done something very silly for 12 games in the trot not to be our number one. That was over. That game was over. Ramsdale should have really got rid of his goalkeeping gloves with Arsenal on them, but then, really. It's a shame for Ramsdale. He's played some fantastic games for us. He was an upgrade on what we had again. It looked like he was our future goalie for the next 8 to 10 years or whatever. And he just had his legs taken away from him. And Arteta has done some magnificent things. We wouldn't be in this great position that we're in without Arteta. But how ruthless is that? Not only is it ruthless, what a gamble he took. Because if he was wrong, that thing, those fingers would have been pointing at him every single game, especially if we let in a goal. So I say, it's a Ramsdale's got to go for his own good, because he's got a challenge for the England number one spot. And I believe he's better than the Everton keeper. I really do. And good luck to him. Wherever he goes, good luck to him. You know? So, but I think our defence needs... I mean, they'll be tested on... We'll talk about it. They'll be tested on Saturday a lot more than they were tested on this last Saturday. But they've just got to get it together again. And I think that, really, I want to see... I don't know if it's going to do it. Oh, we'll talk about the team, sorry, later on. But I want people to see. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's all right. Don't worry, Melvin. If you want to jump the gun, by all means, jump the gun. You know, like I said to Ray earlier, my content is absolutely scattergun. So do not worry about going off on a tangent over here, going off on a tangent over there. You know, we spent years doing a Premier League show that half of it was about the Premier League, and then the other half was about my mate Tom thinking that all the plastic in the world could be recycled in volcanoes. So don't worry about...
I'm glad I missed that one.
Well, yeah. That was it. He went into it for quite a long time as well. He had a whole big thesis and theory about how he thought that all the world's plastic could be thrown into volcanoes. And yeah, it'd be a good idea. Clearly, it wouldn't be. But yeah, so don't worry about jumping the gun ever. If you've got something on your mind, Melvin, and you want to say it, go for it. But Ray, coming back to you, obviously, going to touch on the player, and I might as well bring it up now. Like we said, it's scattergun. So man of the match for this game. I obviously gave it to one person and one person only. It was this young man. Well, he's not necessarily young anymore. I think he's growing. He's just a man now, really. And that was Bukayo Saka. Going into that first goal, obviously, what a pinpoint delivery. And then Havertz. First time in a long time, I've seen Kai Havertz attackable. You know, Melvin, yeah. Obviously, you were from the time of McDonald that would head the ball as hard
Stapleton,
as that.
There you go.
Yeah, we were brought up on Shearer. Obviously, Miroslav Klose, if you want to go down that German route. Lewandowski was very, very good header of the ball. But going into it, Ray, what did you make of it? It was quite a special moment, a special goal. It looked like them two are really developing a partnership as well throughout the game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I kind of want to sit here and disagree with your man of the match shout, but I can't because he was superb, really. And that cross was undefendable, really. You know, how he's just put that in there. All Havertz needs to do is just get his head on it and just guide it. He doesn't need to put any power or anything into it. He just needs to direct it where he wants it to go on goal. And as you saw, he's absolutely buried it. And if them two can strike up a real understanding and partnership, then my God, that's going to really benefit us in the season ahead. I know there's a lot of talk of us needing to get a striker, and you may or may not want to touch on that, James, but I feel like if them two can really get something going, and we can get, you know, more goals out of Saka, more goals out of Havertz, I think we're in a really promising place. And again, I think it's all about just trying to unlock players that we've already got, improve players that we've already got. Of course, we need to bring some players in. I'd be completely delusional if I said we didn't. But I just think that it was a statement performance, I feel, from Saka, especially after the Euros. He got a lot of stick, certainly from our rival supporters during the Euros until the Switzerland game, where he just shut everyone up. But we're used to that as Arsenal fans, right? We see that on an almost weekly basis with Saka. So it's no surprise. I just feel like he's definitely one of the best players in his position in the league currently. And long may it continue.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll go to you first, Melvin. Kai Havertz, obviously, he's a guy that at first really, really divided the opinion. I mean, I've said it time and time again on everything that I've been on. I have not seen in my lifetime of supporting Arsenal a player that was at this level. And then all of a sudden, he's just hit, obviously, a new level. You know, he's almost, you know, insane the level that he's got to now. And what I noticed, like I said, about obviously him attacking the ball with a ferocity that I've not seen before. The celebration from him, this was a guy that when he scored away at Brentford, Arteta was trying to pull him towards the fans as if to be like, come on, you know, this is, and he was putting his shirt out. He was very shy, timid, but now he's running and he's putting his arm over the corner as if to be like, I'm your guy now. I am the guy. I like what Ray was saying. Don't buy a striker. I'm here and I'll sort this out right now. I'll do this myself. Like, we don't need to. But what's your opinion, obviously, on Havertz, Melvin, and also on the striker front? Would you want a necessarily a number nine, or do you think it's more of a wide forward that we need?
I would like to have a striker stroke a wide man. One can play in both positions, because I think sometimes we will need this season, as you know, it's going to be a level, or we're going to be one down or away from home. We need to get a goal for whatever reason. And we look at the bench and it's what we've had before, and everyone knows all their little tricks. We need someone to do something a bit special. And we need an impact player, someone with a bit of energy to do something different. And I don't think really Jesus at this moment in time can do that. He's the main guy you would bring on in those situations. Trossard as well at times can do it, but you can't rely on him. I'm not saying that every footballer you can rely on, but certain footballers, you've got more chance. So I would love to see us get a wide man that can play a little bit inside as well. That would be fantastic. When it comes to Havertz, I don't think he gets enough credit for his link-up play. I think they smash a ball up to him sometimes, and his little one-touch flick on the... He doesn't look like he knows where the rest of our teammates are, but he does. You think, well, what a shame he can't... Well, he's given it to him. Not only in the air, he's underrated. He doesn't always go where he needs to go. I'm talking about from a long goal kick or something. But those little, like, 30-yard balls to him on the deck, he'll suddenly flick it round or bring someone into play, and then we're on our way. But the only thing with him is that he seems to, if he's got too much time, freeze a bit in front of goal. That type of side foot shot stroke, I don't know what he was trying to do, in the second half, That was like he's put on the wrong boots, which is a shame, because I thought he had a very good game, obviously, on Saturday. And that, I thought, what's he doing there? That's like the old Havertz. That was the August 2023 Havertz. But no, he's gone from strength to strength. And he's one of the guys that you expect to play every week, because he feels it, and I'm sure everyone else does. He's part of our team now, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think as well the players absolutely love him. I know. I don't know if you saw that before obviously the first game, they had the video going around of all of them when it was their media day, and they asked him a bunch of questions.
Like, oh, that's right. Yeah.
And pretty much all of them, who do you think is going to score our first goal? I think only other than, I think it was when Odegaard and Jorginho done it, they said Saka, but I think everyone else went Kai Havertz, all of them said Kai. So, yeah, I think they're starting to believe as well as he's believing. But just going on to that second half as well. I'll go back just on Kai Havertz. The guy for Wolves, I know that obviously we've always got VAR and referees under scrutiny. I'll go to you first. I know you're shaking your head, Melvin, but I'll go to Ray first. How... Mosquera, I believe, was his name. How is this not a red card, Ray? Can you explain it to me?
I can't. I actually can't. It's baffling to me how it's not. Do you remember like a couple of seasons ago when Granit Xhaka got sent off against Burnley just for like sort of touching the guy's like this area just very slightly just by his neck? I mean, the Havertz is on the floor, yes. So maybe that's somehow in the referee's mindset makes a difference. It shouldn't, but maybe it does. But he's literally like, you're a wrestling fan, James. He's literally like chokeslammed him almost, isn't he? And he's just holding him there. I mean, that is an assault. Like, it's actual assault. Like, I just don't know. And I think Dermot Gallagher was on Ref Watch saying, he should have stayed on. Honestly.
He should have getting started, right?
Yeah, he should have gone for that Mosquera, but I don't know, man. Like you've asked me, I'm going to sound a bit like bloody Elise here. I don't know because how he hasn't. Did he even get booked for that challenge?
No,
I think that's the police coming to get him now, isn't
it? I think it might be. Yeah,
that's them going to get him now.
It's criminal.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Gerard Gillett was the ref, and the Premier League during the week, I know they do these programs that they make, and they actually made one on him being a referee and were basically amping up about how much of a good referee he is, how he's one of the most astute. He's always looking, he's always set. I'm like, well, you haven't seen that. You know, that no one's gone to you. I think, because I always believed that the ruling was, regardless of how strong it is or anything that's above neck. So if you grab a player, but even if you grab a player by the face, just be like, get out of here type thing. That's an automatic red card. Anything above neck now, or neck and above, is an automatic red card. So I don't, even though he was on the floor and what, I don't think that makes a difference, surely, Melvin.
I think it makes it worse because he had a straight arm. If you've got a straight arm, the guy stand, you're both standing up, you can go back. You're on the deck, you got your necks against the pitch, and someone's got a straight arm on you. There's very little you can do. But I'm playing devil's advocate here. I know why the ref didn't give it, because he only had one arm on him and not two hands on him. That's the reason. You've got to have, the new rule is...
That's why I like having you on here, Melvin. You know this stuff.
You don't, exactly.
Yeah, I know you every day, didn't you?
You've got to have two hands on the neck, with both arms outstretched, and you've got to be doing it to a non-Arsenal player. And that's
they were waiting for Havertz to turn the colour of the new away shirt. If he was going purple on the new away kit, that's when they would have...
and Dermot Gallagher, I mean, he was waffling on. It was like, I've got to get out of this. I can't go against the ref. What can I say? He was struggling. And yet, the other guy on it, the ex-Liverpool fullback who's on the same... program.
Steve Warnock.
Said, blah, blah, blah. I thought, you know, but if he was standing up, it'd be a red card. And then Warnock turned around and goes, I can see why it wasn't given. Can you? Because I can't. Apart from, as I say, the badge on the front of the shirt, there was no other reason for it not to be given. It is, and you know, and I know that an Arsenal player will get sent off for far less. I mean, you could have a program. You should do a program, James, of all the inconsistencies when it comes to Arsenal. You need them more than an hour, though. That's the only thing. I mean,
that'd be like Mike's Podophons, wouldn't it? It'd be a
27 hours
special.
Well, wait, I mean, just like last season, first game of last season, let's go back, for Crystal Palace. Do you know any other player got sent off for a long throw, taking too much time on a long throw? And also, he wasn't over. It was because Ben White took a long time. Passed the ball to him, and he went like that, and looked around, and then got that yellow card, which wasn't even a type of foul. It was like, You know, also Martinelli getting two yellow cards in 3.8.
Yeah, I've never seen that since.
We've never seen that either as well. That's what I'm saying. We're pioneers. I suppose that's what we're, you know, that's why we're so famous. We're pioneers. I'd rather we weren't pioneers, but that's where we are. No, just that's another, you could do a whole series on that, James, if you want.
Yeah, I mean, because you guys have watched it, so thank God you have, because I wouldn't touch that program with a barge pole. But did they mention anything about the second incident? Because I know that's sort of, other than an Arsenal podcast, that's flown the Jesus incident,
might have been
a bit under the radar.
James, I don't watch that program, but I saw it on Twitter or X.
Yes,
I saw the comments. Okay. I don't watch that. I cannot watch it, really, especially if I'm eating. Cannot watch it.
Yeah, so, I mean, the one with Owen and Howard Webb, I won't watch that either.
Oh, no. So, No. I mean, they should get a room, those two, shouldn't they? But with the one with the touching Jesus, they said, but from a different angle, we was just moving him out of the way. So they are making excuses for the guy. You don't make excuses. Again, with the sending off with the down around the throat. You're not there to make excuses. You're there to say it as it is, and they cannot do it. And that's the difference.
I'm watching from home, so it's a completely... You might have not seen the full incident from where you are, Mel. I know great seat, Melvin. I've been with you. It's an amazing... But you can't see down
at
that.
No,
like you've said there, okay... Their excuse, he might be trying to move him out the way. You go like that. Guy's hand, the motion is, I mean, I'm trying to be careful. I'm trying to be as PG, family friendly as I can. It was almost like the guy was a proctologist. Is that the right doctor? That
but could you imagine, all I say, thank God, James, we don't have mixed football.
Yeah. Oh, God. He'd be, yeah.
What would have happened then? He'd be locked up. Yeah.
Yeah. But Ray, what did we've obviously discussed the first one. What did you make of the second one? Again, I know we're trying, we'll speed it up after, but this is just as insane.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's again, if you'd done that to somebody in the street, you'd end up in court, wouldn't you? It was I'm almost shocked. I don't know what to say to you because, like Melvin says, it's unprecedented. Like you won't see this happen in another game for the rest of the season, I'd imagine. I'm quite confident of that. By the way, how Sky have to have a show dedicated on referee mistakes absolutely baffles me, because with the technology and everything and how many referees there are and it's fourth officials and people sat in a Stockley Park, there should be no real mistakes. There should be no getting it wrong, you know? So the fact they actually need a program on it is just laughable, in my opinion. And they've got it all wrong. We don't want to hear referees after the, like, you know, on the Monday morning after a game. Or we don't want to hear Mike Dean on Soccer Saturday. We want to hear refs directly after the game if there's something that they need to, you know, clear up. That's the only time we want to hear referees. Yeah. We don't want them to be celebrities.
That's the problem, mate. You don't hear the referees. They're not accountable straight after the game, the referee. That's number one. Number two, Stockley Park. You don't hear from them unless it's that clangor like Spurs-Liverpool. That was a clangor. That was just unprofessionalism. Yeah. That wasn't a mistake. That was unprofessionalism.
That's but it was so bad things. That they had to release the audio, yes. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To show that it was a genuine mess-up. Absolute. Yeah. I mean, how anyone thought that the terminology would be a grey area, change the word. Why are they waiting to make a mistake? We've seen it, yes. Yeah, so, yeah. And I mean, you know, they have got more, they've got more vocabulary than that, I hope, the people at Stockley Park. It's unbelievable. And they shouldn't have British referees at Stockley Park. Get them from another country. I don't want any doing each other favours like they do. They're all mates. One of them even admitted it last year. He didn't want to embarrass him.
Yeah.
That's why he told him to stay. Get referees in it. All the referees that are referees in this country, no way Stockley Park. You've got to have a what they call a Chinese wall. It should be.
But this is the thing, because I mean, I mainly watch the Premier League. You boys may watch other, you know, leagues across the world. But I mean, going back to Euros, was there any real bad decisions off the top of your heads, like there is in the Premier League? Not I can think of.
You know, there might have been, but I don't recall. I don't recall. There might have been, but I don't.
No,
recall.
I don't.
Of all the other football I watch, the only league where things can get a bit contentious is obviously a lot of people say the Italian one, because there's a lot of refs that are probably still in a few pockets of the big teams, and also Spain, for whatever reason, La Liga don't have goal line technology. That the clubs the clubs voted against it. There was a game last year between Barcelona and Real Madrid. I can't remember who scored, but like it bounced off the line and come back out, and then the ref was like, no play. And Jude Bellingham's running up to him going, you watch, like, because he's obviously used to Germany and England.
Oh, yeah.
And the ref's gone, other than keeping the time. He went, nah, mate, he's like, there's no goal line. It don't bleep. Like, it doesn't exist. Yeah.
James, yeah, who would vote against that? What's the downside? I know, any decision you make, there's got to be an upside and downside. What is the downside?
The only thing I remember listening to ESPN when they were talking about it, and I think his name is Alex Kirkland, who does their La Liga stuff. He's very good. I think he said that because of obviously the disparity financially in that league, because it's pretty much your two teams, and then you've got obviously your Atleticos and your Valencia might do, Atletico Bilbao might win the cup every now and then. The rest of the clubs have virtually nothing.
Really?
And so to implement it financially would hurt them clubs, because the league doesn't obviously split the money equally. Majority of the Premier League will be like, no, we'll sacrifice what we earn so that everybody has it all sort of fairly. And I mean, the thing about the semi-automated offsides last season, in that we didn't have it because we didn't want to pay a French company for it, and then a British company now does it. so that we've got, you know, because we were the first to have goal line technology, because obviously it's Hawkeye, which was a British company. So we were like, yeah, we'll have that. And it's just, again, like you said, Melvin, it's the whole thing of, oh, if it's not done here and it's not us, then we won't have it. Well, I'm like, well, no, but you guys have had it for so long and you've mucked it up. So now you need outside people to come in and sort out the mess.
Yeah.
But obviously, we'll take it away from the refs, because like you said, Ray, you don't want to make celebrities of them. I mean, my whole thing was, is that, you know, you've done a documentary about how good this guy is, and then literally his first game of the next season, he's dropped a clap. You know, there was a part there where he lost the game for both sides. And again, especially coming from an Arsenal opinion, he did make it a lot more nervy because he was just blowing for everything. He completely ruined what was a good flow of a game for a while.
Even the first half, we're all biased. We won the game, and I still think it was one of the worst performances I've seen by a referee. He was clueless. He lost the game. He didn't know what he was doing. Every time a player went down, he was given a foul. Other players were chopped, and he didn't seem to give a foul. It was like, is he living in a parallel universe here or something? He had a really poor game. And it wasn't just because of the non-sending off or what have you. And it didn't make a difference to the score, thank God. But he was shocking. It was like, who is this guy? It's like, if someone told me that was his first game and he'd come up from the Championship, I go, yeah, well, fair enough. But no, they don't reckon he's good, do they? That's the standard we're at then, if that, on that basis.
Well, didn't he come over from like Australia or New Zealand or something? So I'm pretty sure, you know, as you mentioned, get the best foreign refs. But just in this example, they've got Jared Gillett and he's just turned as bad as the others. I don't know whether it's the instructions they're given or whether he's just spent too much time with Howard Webb. I don't know, but
what they've probably done, right? When he came over here, they probably got him a house up north like the rest of the refs, and it changed it, you know, got his bias in.
Yeah. Probably lives next door to Anthony Taylor, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest one for me is that they class that guy as the best of all of them. And I'm like, well, if he's your barometer of what a good referee is, then yeah, you've definitely got your priorities in the wrong place. But touching him more on the game again, obviously Bukayo Saka, he scores his goal and it's an absolutely tremendous goal. At first I thought it was deflected, but then when I watched it back again and I saw it, and what a tremendous goal. And again, like we said earlier, you know, if this guy can knuckle down and produce even higher numbers than what he's producing now, I think he's going to be absolutely sensational, Ray, especially this season.
Yeah, 100%. I think Melvin mentioned earlier about how we don't want to become too predictable and how we sort of want to change things up to keep the opposition on their toes kind of thing. And how many times have we seen Saka shoot across the goalkeeper? He buries them, but we've seen it all the time. So it was refreshing to see Saka do something a little bit different, because Jose Sarr was completely caught out by that. I mean, he was going the other way. He's just finished it and killed the game. And that's exactly what we needed at that time. Because like you said earlier, it did get a little bit nervy and it did feel like, you know, we might lose a little bit of control. But no, it just seals the win, seals the points. And these days, 2-0 to the Arsenal is a game set and match result, especially against a team like Wolves. So I'm really pleased for him. Like I mentioned earlier, he's really seemed to kick on from the Euros, and he's our main guy. You know, we can debate whether we want Trossard or Martinelli or maybe somebody else on the left. But on the right, Bukayo Saka is our guy, and we need a really big season from him. So it's a great start.
I had no doubt. So it wasn't even on my mind. I wasn't even thinking about it. You know, what happened in the Euros? What's he going to be like when he plays, you know, start the season? He's a very, we've got to remember, this kid or adult now is a very, very strong character. After what happened to him in the Euros a few years ago, come back and just play, get on with it and have another level to his game. This guy, we don't realise what a strong character he is. And so England getting beat in the last second, the ball coming off the back of Saka's head, he would have still turned up for the Arsenal and got on with it and done his job. I've got no worries about his character. There's nothing. He's got more character than a lot of other players put together. I don't mean the Arsenal, I mean generally. He's got fantastic character, and that's what makes one of the reasons makes him such a good player. But when he whipped it in to the near post, everyone, don't tell me everyone was going, oh yeah, I knew he'd do that. No one knew he was going to do that. Everyone was going for the, well, I hope he gets it in the post, not past the post, far post. It was just terrific to see. And it was hit with a bit of venom as well. It wasn't just curved, he's really hit it with venom. No, he's a very, very good player. And I think it's a bit of a shame. I didn't think Ben White gave him as much support as he has in previous games. I thought sometimes he got the ball and he was waiting for someone to play off him, and he never got that second half because I think that Odegaard as well was lost a bit of energy, and I think that's where we might have changed it. Another reason we might have changed some of the subs, it took a long time. I would have, you know, if he's got players running off him, he can do marvellous things, Saka. He can put the ball through or take them on or push it one way. But when he's up there and it seems like in that very small area he's by himself and he's got no other out but for holding the ball up or trying to get past the player, it's really tough on him. But he manages to get by sometimes.
Yeah, what I liked as well, though, is that obviously the game state allowed it, that obviously on the 80th minute he was allowed to be taken off. I was quite happy that he, Arteta can now go, well, do you know what, actually, we've got enough of this sort of control of the game at this point now, especially with that second goal, like you said, Ray. I think that eased, especially me at home. I don't know if it's the same for you, Melvin, in the stadium. As soon as that second win, it was very much like a, okay, all right now, we're good now. I like that, obviously, he did take him off and he got that round of applause on that walk that he'd done. He got to have like a little lap of honour for himself because he deserves it. He is such a strong character. And I know this week, obviously, the Purely Boys did their podcast earlier in the week. And Adam, that was on it, I didn't actually know this. He was saying that during the Euros, when they all turned up for the camp, the players all, when they went to the facility, were just like, oh, okay, well, where's the like lounge where we hang around in? You know, where's the cafeteria? Where am I sleeping? Bukayo Saka, as soon as he got there, went, where's the rehab? And, you know, where's the facilities for aftercare? And they just went, that's the mindset. That's just, and they're like 20, 23 or whatever he is. And they said, that's him, that, you know, he's that twigged on that he's like, right, where's my re? Because he knew, regardless of what happens at this Euros, I've got another big season for Arsenal again next year. Because he is, like Ray said earlier, he is our main guy. If we're going to, you know, as much as I say about Saliba and everybody else like that, in terms of if we're going to win a game by somebody scoring, you know, you said it earlier, Melvin, as well, in terms of people that can make something out of anything, I've seen games where I thought he's been absolutely diabolical. He'll whip in a corner and someone will get a header, or he'll skim and shimmy past someone and smash the ball, like you've said at the weekend. And again, we can count on maybe one or two fingers the amount of players that we've got in this Arsenal team that can do that. I think it's mainly probably him and Odegaard are the only two that can find a pass, or they've got a way of where they can shoot and hit a ball. The way they strike balls, Odegaard and Saka, I just think they're two of the best at it in the league. And just that makes them, you know, by facto, two of the best of it for us.
I think just to finalise on Saka, I think that it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for him to be an Arsenal captain. He's not that far away. He could be. I think he deserves it. The amount of effort, what he's done for the club at such an early age. If suddenly Odegaard doesn't fancy it next year to be captain for whatever reason, there's loads now. We used to have no captains in the team. Do you remember?
Yeah.
There was like, well, you toss the... No, you're better at getting heads than me. Anyway, now we've got quite a few. And I put Saka near the top of that. I really do. Because he's got it all for me.
Well, it was only a few seasons ago, Melvin. Like you say, they were putting the name in the hat, weren't they? They were having a vote for who they wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, that again, we'll go into that. That's one that we could debate in a minute. But yeah, it was unbelievable. But so obviously we've won that one. And let's touch into, well, sorry, before I go into it, is there anything else on the game that either of you would like? I mean, my man of the match shout, is there anything? I saw a lot of people say David Raya should be man of the match for this one. But what do you guys think? Do you think Saka deserves it?
Yeah, on the basis that he had one job to do and he done it well, Raya. He wasn't consistent because they didn't have that many shots, or what I would call amazing shots against us. Had he let in, I mean, apart from the header, any other shot that he would have let in that game, you'd have gone, my God, useless. So I don't think, you know, one terrific save, yes, but that doesn't mean you're man of the match, I'm afraid. Sorry. Not for a goalkeeper anyway.
I think David Ray had a very good game. And as Melvin said, that save was really top draw. But just overall, I think he was just a very solid sort of 8 out of 10. For me, Saka was a 9. He got the goal, he got the assist, he clinched it. I thought he was superb.
Okay, so touching on to Saturday this weekend, we've got Aston Villa away. That's going to be a very, very tough game. I know that there were glimpses in that game against West Ham away at the weekend where they did look a bit vulnerable. They looked susceptible. And I thought Ollie Watkins, that's like you said, Melvin, about Saliba having the worst game you've seen him have for a while. That was the worst I've seen Ollie Watkins look in a very, very long time. He did not look himself at all. When Duran come on, he completely changed the game for him. Obviously got the winning goal, but yeah, they just look so much more functional when he come on. But lineup wise for Saturday evening, Melvin, I know you said you wanted to go first earlier, so I'll let you go first now. And I think I'm going to be able to figure out what's the change you want to make, but I will let you say it first before me and Ray.
There's two, James, actually, that I'd like to make.
Oh, two. Okay. Yeah, cool.
My main one was that, well, I think the one you're thinking about is Jorginho in midfield instead of Partey. That is.
It's definitely not actually. It's the other one. I think you're going to say.
The other one is that left back, put the Italian in. If not, yeah, put the Italian
oh,
in.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Do you
yes.
think?
Okay. Or Timber. I mean, or Timber, I will not start with Zinchenko at left back because Zinchenko is good at cutting into midfield and doing the whole rolling his foot over the ball and all that. But when our back's against the wall and against Villa, it could be for a period of time. He's not the guy you want in the trenches with you, really, when you're defending. Where the other guys, Timber can get stuck in, I believe. He's very mobile and solid. And he's quite good in the air, actually, for his height. And I think the Italians, so I would start with, say, Timber and then see how that goes and then perhaps bring on the Italian because I do not want to see Zinchenko play at left back because they're very good. They got that guy that we were after on the right. What's his name? Bailey?
Leon Bailey, yeah.
Bailey, who's a very good player, very tricky, very direct, terrific player. And I think that if Zinchenko plays against him, that will be our weak link, I'm afraid. You are the weakest link. I mean, I thought he was parts of the game. He was quite weak on Saturday, Zinchenko, actually, a couple of times. But no, that's one thing. And I would have Partey. Now, right, you're saying if he's match fit. Yes, he is match fit. But he did have a mere second half. I don't know whether that's down to fitness or what. But if he suddenly recovers and he's raring to go, yeah, put him in. Obviously, on his day, there's no one better. But if you're trying to defend something, you've got to have a solid base against Villa. I would put Jorginho in. That would be my main two.
Yeah, fair enough.
Ray, what about yourself?
Yeah, I think what worries me about Villa is just the pace that they have, especially in wide areas. And I think the pace alone would kill Zinchenko, let alone the trickery or skill. So I feel like we do need someone that is very astute at the back, can defend. I actually can't remember if Leon Bailey's left or right footed.
But I think he's left footed, but plays on the right.
Yeah, so I mean, I would think potentially then I would like Timber in there because he's right footed naturally, and maybe he can sort of show him a particular
inside.
Way. But
yeah.
Inside, yeah. And if we can crowd that area, make it very congested, then I kind of like that idea. But yeah, I just think that Villa will have a very physical midfield. I know they lost Douglas Luiz, who is a big loss for them, by the way. Not much has really been talked about that, but I think he's a huge loss. And they've also lost Diaby as well to Saudi, haven't they? So those are two important players for Villa last season that they no longer have. But Amadou Diarra, I know he scored at the weekend, didn't he? And again, he's just going to be a physical powerhouse. Thankfully, the Arsenal are full of physical powerhouses these days, so I'm not going to worry too much, but he is a threat. So maybe if we play Jorginho in there, potentially that's something they could target. So as long as Partey's match fit, then maybe I would feel a bit more comfortable with Thomas Partey in there. But I can't really grumble too much if we did have Jorginho. The control that he would give us, I think, would also be very beneficial. So let's see. Let's see what Mikel does.
I agree with both of what you're saying. I think he will stick with Thomas Partey, but I do believe he will make the change at left back because, again, Zinchenko just defensively, that guy's pace is front. You want a dual winner out there. You want someone that will, you know, if need be, I believe Timber will, you know, he'll take what I call those clever. Man City have they don't normally get a lot of them, but they do. They do their clever cards, as I like to call them. You know, just there's a yellow, just I'm there. You know I'm there. Don't try that sort of stuff again. And I think Timber, when he come on, I thought it was a very good cameo, actually, at the week. Apart from when he tried to take everybody on his own near the end. I thought he looked brilliant when he come on. And again, it was very much, when he got signed, it was like, it was very quiet about him. And I think he liked that because he was like, yeah, don't make much of a fuss about me because I'll show you when I go on the pitch. And I think it was 5 or 6 minutes within that Community Shield. Obviously, I watched him pre-season as well. But when I was watching him against Man City in the Community Shield, within 5 or 6 minutes, I was like, I like the cut of this guy's jib already. I was like, this guy is a serious player, And to get injured when he did and everything else, it's just really, really unfortunate. But yeah, I think he's coming in to be like, I'm a starter. I don't make the bench. And if he goes with Calafiori, Melvin, it is straight into the deep end, you know, into the hot water, into the fire. But if that's what you want to, you know, if you want to test a player, if you want, you need someone to come in at the ditters. I don't think that's a very, very, you know, I don't think that's a mental shout at all. I think that could very well happen, but it is a big, big game to play him in. Mm. And if you're looking at it as well, there's obviously still the rumours, as long as it's done before 12 o'clock midday on the Friday, so there's still a day to do it if it's happening. Apparently the president of Sociedad is in town to discuss this. If we get this Mikel Moreno over the line, do either of you think he'll be playing in midfield, potentially? No. I mean,
not against Villa, James, no. We don't do things like that. It's all done by computers now, isn't it? I don't think I don't think that'll happen. I mean, he might be on the bench, but I don't think it won't start. It definitely won't start. No, he won't start. Yeah, bring him on. Yeah. If things are going well, he'll bring him on with 15, 20 minutes to go or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we know how Unai Emery plays, right? So he's going to make it a very sort of helter-skelter, 50-50, knife-edge kind of game. And it could go either way. So I don't expect either side to, you know, blitz it. And I think he's really going to try and drag us to Villa's level and really stress us. And that's why I don't really want Zinchenko, because if we have, I think Zinchenko thrives when we have, you know, 70% of possession of the ball, we're in control, it's a sunny day at the Emirates and we're playing teams that just want to sit back and we've got to break them down. And teams actually try and stress us a bit and ask us questions, that's, as you guys mentioned, that's when I think we do need something different. So if we did bring in Calafiori, I'm all for it. Again, it's welcome to the Premier League, isn't it? But I'd be comfortable with either Timber or Calafiori.
I don't, you know, I'd like to, I want us to win, obviously, 100%. But a draw is not the end of the world. Not at all. I mean, let's face it, we never got a point off of Villa last year. And I don't think that was deserved. We should have beaten them at the Emirates. We missed so many chances first half. And against Villa, they scored that good goal against us when they attacked us from the right-hand side and got through. And after that, we had chance after chance. Didn't really put our foot too much on the pedal, as we should have done. And we had that silly handball that went against us when we scored a goal. Or not. Well,
there was two.
A weird thing.
Yeah, there was 10 as well.
Remind me, something about Havertz, I remember.
Yeah, there was two penalty shouts in the game. So obviously, there was the one where basically David Luiz pretty much kicked Jesus in the gonads.
Oh, that's right.
The ball bounced and he went through his legs underneath, and that never got given. And then the one after that, yeah, they said that Havertz obviously pushed and handballed the ball in. But if you actually watch it, Matty Cash handballed it before even Havertz got there. So that's what completely confused me, was that I was like, well, hang on a sec, he's handballed that even before the Havertz situations come in place. So again, that just show, again, that goes back to the incompetency that we talked about earlier. But
another one for the show, James. Another one.
Yeah, yeah, it's on there. It's on there for the marathon.
Add it to the list.
That will bump it up to 28 hours. We'll do an hour on that one. But in terms of predictions, if I was going to press you both now, I guess I know a lot. Sometimes people don't like to predict, so if you don't, you don't have to. But if I was to press you on it, what are you saying? I'll go to you first, Ray, because you look like you're more willing to give a prediction than Melvin at the moment. Melvin's put in the face of don't ask me, so I'll go to Ray.
Like I say, I think it will be on a knife edge, so I think we'll nick it 2-1.
Yes.
I hope it's not 2-2.
Good man.
I hope it's not 2-2, but I think we'll nick it 2-1. So, yeah, hopefully, as Melvin said, we obviously lost there last year and we can avenge that. I really just want to be that team that goes there. And because Villa had such a detrimental effect to our season last year, we only needed 2 points to win the league and they took 6 off of us. I want to go there, their opening game of the season, 5 o'clock. Their fans have been drinking all day. I want to just go there and lay a marker and just absolutely squash that. And the nonsense that Unai Emery is a better coach, supposedly, than Arteta these days. I want that to be put to bed as well. So hopefully we go there and absolutely set our stalls out. But if I think with my head, I think it's going to be maybe 2-1.
Nice. Yeah, same as me. Oh. Melvin, do you want to give? If not, you don't have to.
Of course I will. Yeah. I think it's going to be tight. I think we'll nick it 1-0.
Nice. That was what Neil said, funny enough. He said 1-0. He reckons so as well. So great minds. I'm going to stick with Ray. I'm going to go with 2-1. And I'm the same as you. Lay a marker. And also there's a lot of them that, not necessarily their fans. I haven't really got a big problem with the fans. But there's a few players of theirs, especially their one that wears the gloves. I'd like him to shut. I'd like to give him a bit of sum at the weekend because he's been very, very annoying over the years, and he's a brilliant goalkeeper. That's what annoys me. This is what annoys me is when they're brilliant players and then they're knobs. That's what winds me up the most, because I'm like, you don't have to do this. You just be a good footballer and go about your life. Yeah. You have to just pipe up and be annoying.
You can have a laugh when they're like Mopay, but when they're actually World Cup winners and they're actually half decent, then it is more difficult, isn't it? So.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he's very good. He's very good.
Yeah. So just before we wrap up and get out of here, obviously, transfer season's going around. It's a bit mental. What do you guys make first and foremost on Mikel Moreno? Now, for me, Spanish football over here is behind a paywall. So I haven't seen him other than clips that Pete. And again, I could go out in the garden here and get my brother to edit stuff. We've all seen how my brother edits his music videos. He could make me look like Messi with the stuff he can do on a computer. So, but what are you guys making of it? The one thing I will say is this player comes across to me as one that Mikel Arteta has personally gone, I want this man. Because normally he gets advised by the group that are around him. You know, Edu influences him. I know Stuyvenberg made him pivot to Trossard, obviously working with him previously at the Belgian club that Stuyvenberg was managing back in the day. Obviously, Kana, the goalkeeping coach, has influenced him quite badly with Renarsson and Turner, but then he's told him about working previously with Raya. So I'll go to you first, Ray. What do you make of Mikel Moreno? Do you think... I know he played for Newcastle back in the day and they're still quite fond of him even from that small period of time. But yeah, what do you make of this signing if it gets over? I mean, it's pretty much the best kept secret in football that he's coming.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think it just fits really. I think we lost Xhaka the season before last. I feel like he's the upgrades that we kind of needed on Xhaka. I can't say I watched Real Sociedad religiously or anything, so I can't sort of give you a full breakdown. But yeah, from what everything you hear and read and all the breakdowns on YouTube and stuff, but he is he's going to be perfect really in the system. Sounds like he's aerially really, really dominant and wins all his duels. And that's what we need. I think we've kind of brought Havertz in initially, and maybe it was always a plan to play him up front. But when he came in, we were experimenting with him in like the 8 and the sort of midfield positions, and it wasn't really working, was it? I feel like we're going to bring Mikel Moreno in to do that job. and to really sort of give us even more steel in the midfield. And of course, as I mentioned, he is an aerial threat. So he's going to be quite crucial to our set pieces, because that's another thing. We were so good at set pieces last year, but they can be figured out. So we need to keep adapting, keep sort of reinventing them. And we need to come up with something different. So maybe having another monster who can head the ball and cause havoc. It's only going to be positive, isn't it?
Yeah, Melvin, do you know anything about him? Have you studied Real Sociedad? Are you sitting there at home can't come out tonight. I'm watching Real Sociedad versus Zaragoza. You know, I can't do it.
No, but I saw him in the championships recently, and he looked solid. A good header, because against Germany he got the winner. That was a quality header. That wasn't a good morning header, was it? It was a proper header.
No.
He knew exactly where to put it and all that. And he's solid. The only thing against him, and it's not a big, you say, is an Arteta signing, a typical. The only thing that goes against him, I'm not against it myself, I think it's good because we need a bit of experience, is slightly above the age that we normally sign people at. You know, he's not in the 22, 24 range. He's the 28 now. But I think we've got to have, that's why I think we've got to buy him, on the basis that he will be an upgrade on our team. We've got to go for it again this year, and it's no good coming second or third. However good that is, and it is good considering where we've come from, I'm worried that players will go, can we ever win it with the Arsenal? I think we've got to actually say, you know what, all right, we're not doing this for the next 5-10 years. We've bought this player for the next 2-4 years to win as many titles as we can. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and we, like you said as well, we've all seen him win something in the summer. So that's another, you're bringing in another winner with a winning mentality into that group, which I don't think is I don't see anything negative about that at all. Just quickly there, obviously, Mike put the comment in saying that Fabrizio's saying that Eddie's agreed terms with Forrest. Yeah, I've seen a few of the others say that they were struggling to reach the personal terms earlier. For me, I looked at it and thought, I think the only player at Forest that's on more than 100 grand a week is their centre half that's from Serbia. I think they've paid him 105 grand. I was like, there is no way Nottingham Forest are paying Eddie Nketiah 100 grand a week. So he's going to have to take a cut, because I think Gibbs White only gets 80 grand a week. And I was like, well, Gibbs White's Nottingham Forest's best player. Hell, I'd have Gibbs White.
Would you have swapped him? I'd have swapped him.
Oh, well, exactly. And I'm like, there is no way that he's going to be paid more than Gibbs White gets paid for Nottingham Forest. So I believe he's obviously taken the cut into his wage, but they've told him, look, you're going to play every game. You know, you are going to play every game, which is, for me, and I've had a bit of a problem throughout the window at us declining these bids. But if the rumours are true and we've held firm and it's going to be 26 million now, and then obviously the 4 million on add-ons or what have you over the year. So theoretically, you're getting 30 million for Eddie Nketiah. I think that's a master.
Yeah.
I will applaud Edu for holding firm and go, especially after getting 35 for Smith Rowe. I think to make 65 million off them two players is a masterstroke.
Yeah. It's a shame we can't get a little bit of money for Nelson as well.
Well, for me now, I'd let Nelson go on a loan. As long as they covered all of his wage, I'd be happy for Nelson to just go on a loan, because I think you've made your two big markers in sales with them two. I think that, again, Ramsdale, if you can get a permanent deal for him, great. But even loaning him out, because if you loan him out within the league, Melvin, he can't play against us, but he'll hurt other teams. Other big teams will come up against Ramsdale. So I think I've got no problem loaning Ramsdale within. Don't give him the Ajax, as much as he'll probably enjoy going to Amsterdam. Him and his dad will probably love Amsterdam. No, don't do that. give him to someone within the league.
I'm surprised that Nelson hasn't gone to Chelsea.
I'm surprised any of them haven't gone. I'm surprised none of them have gone to Chelsea.
I'm surprised. I'm just shocked. I don't understand what it is. What can it be? Do they not know that he's available? They've bought everyone else.
They are. Saturday, that manager stood there and said, I've dropped Sterling for a tactical reasons for this game.
That's a lie, isn't it?
It's Wednesday today, and he's come out and said, no, I don't want him.
they've given his squad number to Neto now.
Yeah.
So he doesn't even have the number seven anymore. It's shocking. I mean, how they've treated Conor Gallagher as well.
Yeah.
Is absolutely outrageous, isn't it? He was on their books, you know, since he was an 8 year old. He's given everything to that club, and obviously I've got no time for Chelsea whatsoever. But outside looking in, you can only think, what are you doing? The fans love him. He's a crucial part, and because he's 100% profit, they've let him go. So
Ray, they've also let him go, I think, because he hasn't got a 28-year contract like the others.
Oh, true.
So they can sell him.
Yeah, and they've swapped him for a player that was with them on loan that really has been terrible. I mean, when we were linked with João Félix earlier in the window, I was begging, don't do this. I know Arteta can turn people around, but I was like, that guy has pretty much been a bum everywhere he's played. So I'm like, do not get him at Arsenal whatsoever. I'm glad that obviously he's gone back there. But just quick before we leave, obviously we said about wanting a winger/forward. If we can get one, was there any other area of the pitch that you feel that needs to be addressed, or do you think that's the last? For me, I think that's the last bit to do. There's still a bit of time before it shuts.
No, if we can get a forward that can play wide stroke and a little, and also up front, for me, that's it. Even if they can just play wide, I'll be happy. Yeah.
Sorry. And if Ramsdale goes as well, you want a second?
Yeah, we'll bring.
Someone, aren't we? I think we're talking to.
Yeah, yeah. He's a 6'4" Garcia from Espanyol, I think it is. Yeah, it's from what someone who I trust, again another Spanish journalist that I follow on Twitter, he basically said, if you like David Raya, you will like Juan Garcia because they're pretty much similar, but he's 6'4". So I was like, okay, if he's a 6'4" version of Ray, I'll take that every day of the week. But yeah, Ray, what about you? Is there any other than them two positions? Is there anything else you feel needs to be addressed?
No, I'd have to agree. We need a forward. The one thing is, I can't sit here and give you a name of somebody that I absolutely think would be perfect, because I just don't really see who is out there that is absolutely going to come in and bang. I know Victor Gyökeres, my good friend Albert, has been championing Gyökeres all summer and beyond. And I think he'd be a good option, but there's no guarantees that he's going to come in and lift us. And goal scorers are the hardest thing to do in football, and it's the most expensive position to buy. What I do think we need is a bit more pace in the midfield and the attack, as I mentioned with Villa. What scares me about them, yes, Ollie Watkins is a really good finisher now, but it's just the pace they have in their front line. And I feel like we are missing that a little bit. Martinelli, I think, has that in the locker, but he sort of just gets his head down and he runs with it. If he can get the ability to run with it but get his head up, then I think we've got ourselves a really, really dangerous option. But yeah, I really wanted Nico Williams, but obviously he's staying where he is. I think that would have been the perfect one. But other than that, mate, I know we need a forward. I just don't know what they look like.
Melvin, Ray obviously said that he can't think of a name. He knows the position and the type of player. Have you got a name that pops out in your head that you'd go, that's the guy?
I'll be honest with you. The only one that pops up is the one that that you spoke of. What's his name? The one who played for Coventry. I saw him play for Coventry, funnily enough, a couple of times on the box. They're on for some reason. I don't know if it's to do with promotion or whatever it was, playoffs or something. And he looked different class, but that's Coventry. And then he did very well. Was it last season? And he's
he's had a brilliant start to this season as well. He's three goals and three assists already.
That's what I mean.
Because as good as he is at scoring goals, he's brilliant at setting goals up.
And he's got an absolute presence. So I like that. Yeah. So if I could be very, very greedy and say not just a wide player, I want someone in the middle, he would be my man to go for.
Nice. Can I ask you boys a question, though? Do you think if we sign Gyökeres, do you think he'll start straight away? Because I don't believe he will. And then if we're asking a guy to come in and come off the bench or play bits and bobs and then grow into the team,
That's a problem we got. That's why, how can we ever sign a top striker on that basis? It's like when Spurs were trying to buy a number two or Harry Kane. They couldn't do it because the top ones knew they weren't going to play every week or very few games.
I think primarily it's just going to be a wide player. Me and Michael all the time talk about Gyökeres and how much we'd love Gyökeres. If it happened, great. But then, for me, you can never have unless you're Chelsea. They're not actually good players. You can never have as many good players, can you? It's a spoil of riches, really, for me.
Sorry, James. Sorry,
no, to interrupt. No,
no,
go on. Go on.
No, I would like. I think that would. I would like him. It's just if I knew that once he got his chance, he would take it and then potentially stay there, then I'm all up for it. But if he's just going to be a bit part player and he's going to come in and out, because like you say, the level we're trying to get to win a Premier League is different to Coventry trying to win promotion or Sporting Lisbon, trying to win the league in Portugal. It's different and the expectation is so much higher. So if he can come in and once he gets his chance, establish himself like any player, then fantastic. But if he's going to struggle to get in the team and if he's going to struggle not playing every week, if that makes sense, I'm not sure if it's worth the investment. But that's just my opinion.
I'll tell you who I wouldn't mind. I know that I saw him play against Spurs last season. He was shocking, but that's a one game. But I've admired him. Is the guy that plays on the left wing for Brighton.
Mitoma?
Yeah, Mitoma. Yeah. I think he could do a job. On either flank, though.
Jack's pumping the Mitoma one.
How is he? On either flank. Yeah, he's a big fan. He plays naturally on the left, but he could play on the right, give Saka a bit of a rest during games or whatever. And he can definitely play on the left if Martinelli and Trossard don't pull up any trees. I just think if he plays in a team like with our midfield behind him, I think he'd go to another level. I really do.
Yeah, we need to see on that one, because I know that Brighton wise, I think it's a Dingra that we've been looking at a lot, and he's a younger sort of player. But I think he's one that we could build. There's parts of a Dingra that I've watched and gone, you're raw, but there's something there. He's got the talent for me. But just quick before we leave, we've got a question here. I'll pass it over to you first, Ray, and then Melvin. They've just asked, do you see Tierney benefit in this team and in what way?
No, I don't see him benefiting the team. I really like Kieran Tierney personally. I'm gutted that he's sort of been phased out. But no, I just don't see where he gets in. Arteta clearly doesn't play with that old school, overlapping left back anymore. He wants his player to come in and invert and sort of start with a build up. So if I was the manager, I would still have Kieran Tierney involved 100%, but I just don't think Arteta will. And it's a shame because he's injured, isn't he? Once again, he's injured again. So I don't know when he's due back. Yeah, unfortunately, although he's a bit of a fan's favourite, one of the best abilities you can have in football is availability. And if he's not available, then I'm afraid we're going to just have to cut our losses.
Melvin?
I agree with Ray, really. What would he be? Number six, left back? How many people in front of him that could play left back? I mean, he's not going to be there. Yeah. Well, he's got to be in about number five or six. So that's not going to happen. And he might need about four or five games to get fit again. Well, that's not going to happen. No, he's not going to play for the Arsenal. I wouldn't have thought again in the first team. I think they'll have to sell him, as you say, Ray, cut the losses and move on. It's a shame because he was one of those guys that, apart from Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, was saving Mikel Arteta's job. Let's not forget. Yeah. He used to give 100% every week. Was unbelievable. The colder it was, the shorter his shirt got. He was really, really it was a pleasure to watch. It really was. And it's a shame that injuries, even without inverting, I think that injuries done him. It was injuries because he's an intelligent footballer. He could have learned to have played that type of football playing inside. He played left half or whatever you like to call it, for Scotland anyway. So, as I say, go back on what I said, he's an intelligent footballer. He would have been able to adapt, in my opinion, but injuries done him, and he's just another Arsenal player that what could have been without injuries.
Yeah. I mean, throwing my 2 cents for what it's worth in. I don't know. I didn't see him myself if he was there at the weekend, because there was a lot of the, you know, normally the players that aren't playing and the young lads, they sit right behind the dugout, don't they? They all like watch the game together there, or if not, they're in their own boxes or what have you. So I don't know. I don't want to throw him under the bus and say that he wasn't there, because I don't know. But for me, I could see him benefiting just from the point of view of where he's being rehabbed, and it will probably be that January will either loan or sell him. I think he would benefit just being there, because like you said, Melvin, he's a good character, and also he's a model professional when he is fit and everything else. And I think just having someone like that within the group still, even if he's not playing, just having someone like that around can only benefit, especially these younger players, someone like Lewis Skelly that's coming in, that's learning to play a left back. I think when Tierney's back up and fit and will probably train, he's someone that could go up to a Lewis Skelly and tell him a few things, help him out here and there. So, yeah, I think he would benefit from that. But in terms of physically playing and minutes, I don't think we'll see him in an Arsenal shirt again this season. I'll be very shocked. Yeah. If even in Carabao Cup, I think he'll pick Skelly at left back over him. I think he'll go with a new guy because he knows he's going to pick him in the future. I can't see him, you know, just giving Tierney games and then you cup time, which hurts his value if someone's going to take him in January. Yeah. I can't ever see him playing a league game or a cup game, certainly a Champions League game. So,
but yeah, and that's a good point on his mentality. I didn't really sort of consider that, but that is a good shout. I just think that even Celtic obviously love him to bits, and I feel like Celtic, if they could, would have already signed him already. But because he's injured and he's just gonna, you know, cost them money, even they're not gonna do it. So, like you say, I think we've got him until January. Hopefully he can get back and he can get himself fit and he can have a positive influence behind the scenes. But
Get himself a decent club. I'd love to see him get himself a decent club and have a decent career the rest of his
Okay, well, that wraps that up. And before we leave, Melvin, where can people find you?
If anyone wants to look, it's Melvin, the only way is Arsenal Marks on Twitter. That's the only place I really get involved.
And right
on this one, sorry, and also on Danny's channel as well, sometimes, aren't I, as a guest?
Yeah,
on the Burkett Wonderland. Yeah.
And Ray, what about yourself? Where, if people want to look, where can they find you?
I guess on Twitter. I've sort of come off Twitter, I kind of had enough of it, Twitter especially. So,
Enzo Fernandez Brigade again?
Yeah. Do you probably remember me ranting about that last time? And obviously, after his antics over the summer, I like him even less now. So, if you want to follow me, it's Ray_Cassim on Twitter or X. I guess that's what it's called these days. But yeah, if not, I'm sure I'll be floating about on the Arsenal YouTube space somewhere. So, yeah, thanks for listening.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you both. And thanks everybody that's been in the chat and everyone that subscribed recently and obviously followed on the audio platforms and giving that a review as well. Much appreciated. And we will be back again, and hopefully I'll have you two back on before the end of the season. But yeah, thanks again, everybody, for watching, and take care.